You're listening to 23 Jungle Tales, all on the Sports Objective. Between now and opening day, we will talk to 23 former Pirate baseball players about their path to East Carolina, their time in the purple and gold, and what they're up to now. Now let's talk Pirate baseball. Welcome in to 23 Jungle Tales, brought to you by PGXGloves.com. And with us right now, as always, we have Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up, dude?
What's going on, Dave? How you doing?
Very happy to be off today and enjoying, obviously, a day off. Plus, we get a chance to hang out with a former Pirate baseball player. And Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up, dude?
How's it going, guys?
As we mentioned, that our great 23 Jungle Tales brought to you by PGX Gloves. Bubba, I know they have a lot of great things. And speaking of Pirate baseball, it was actually started by a Pirate, right?
Yeah, PGX Gloves, Mark Minakazi, tremendous third baseman, 2003 to 2005 under Randy Mazie, played on that team in 2004 that won a school record 51 ball games. And I really appreciate Kaz and PGX Gloves partnering with us. Customized and personalized gloves, batting gloves, also football and golf gloves, and also some pretty sharp-looking swag. I'll put it on the screen for our viewers here. The logo that you see on the left, and then he also has another one that just has the lion logo with the baseball in the mouth. Very sharp-looking, and he has that on a variety of apparel. So check out pgxgloves.com. He has a Pirate collection that has purple and also ash, black, and maybe some gold as well.
Great stuff there. Appreciate Kaz for his support of the program. PGXGloves.com. Go there, Pirate Nation. And, well, even if you're not in Pirate Nation and you're not a Pirate fan, we want to support Kaz and his great, great company, PGXGloves.com. Bubba, yeah. Very excited to have with us right now a great Pirate not too long ago. From the recent past.
Yeah, this guy played on that 2009 Super Regional team, won 46 games. He went 7-0 that season, also pitched in big leagues for parts of four seasons, had a no-hitter with the San Francisco Giants. Welcome into the show, Chris Heston. Chris, we appreciate your time.
Yeah, guys, I appreciate you having me. And just real quick on Kazi, man, I got to play with him in the minor leagues a little bit. Kazi's one of the best guys out there, so definitely support anything that he's got going on. I actually have some primal stuff. I got a hat and stuff that Kaz gave me a while back. So full support of that. Go get some of that stuff.
Hey, now Chris, are you aware of Kaz's nickname?
I'm sure he has a couple if you know Kaz. Which one are you referring to?
Yeah, the nickname that he had during his time in East Carolina, it was given to him by the Lawhorn Twins, and some of his other teammates. I'm not sure who initially coined him with this nickname, but he was known as the Water Buffalo.
I could see that. That's a fitting nickname for Okaz, man. But yeah, awesome dude. He was obviously, you know, before me at East Carolina, but we did cross paths in the minor leagues a little bit, played together, and like I said, just, you know, one of the best guys out there.
No doubt about it. You are a part of, obviously, one of the best teams ever, East Carolina history with the 2009 Super Regional. Talk a little bit about that. That was a very special team, and I know you guys had a great coach with Billy Godwin, and this program, we talk about it all the time. One of the things we love about 23 Jungle Tales is the very fact we get a chance to look back at a former Pirate and celebrate a lot of great traditions that we've had over the years with great teams, great, in your case, pitchers, but players that are like. But what was that team like?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, you know, getting to play on that 2009 team. And we were good, man. You know, we hit. You know, that's probably why I went 7-0, because we scored 30 runs a game, it seemed like. But it was fun, man. You know, like you said, Coach Billy Godwin, still keep in touch with him to this day. Great coach, you know, maybe even a better dude. And we had great coaching staff. Link Jarrett was the assistant at the time. He's now at, I believe, Notre Dame head coach in there. So that's just a testament of, you know, his coaching ability. And then, you know, Bill Jarman was there, who was you know, taught me a lot. So we had, you know, great coaching staff, a lot of good ball players that, you know, went out to play at the next level. And, you know, a few of them made it to the big leagues as well. So, you know, we were pretty stacked, man. And it was just a fun year of baseball. You know, it's fun to go out there and win a bunch of ball games and, you know, come home with a little ring from, you know, I believe the winning the conference and all that stuff. So super regional appearance. So it was just a, you know, one of those years that you never forget, you know.
What do you remember about that regional in Clark LeClaire? Obviously, having to beat South Carolina two games in a row, and just that whole 4 days, you know, coming out of the loser's bracket to win that thing.
Yeah, it was crazy. You know, funny you talk about that. Me and Jared Afchin were just together last weekend. He was the catcher at the time for a couple of years. We were just talking about the energy in that place, you know, during that game when we came back and beat him in extra innings and walked it off, you know, with a big hit. I believe it was Devin Harris who got a big knock and he scored a roll or whatever, you know, and just the energy. And, you know, to this day, you know, I don't know. There's been many times that I've had that kind of energy, you know, going, you know, in a baseball game. So, you know, just to be a part of that and you know, the history of that and doing it at Clark LeClaire was very cool.
And that's what I was going to talk about, is that very fact, Chris, is that you guys are, you know, we had two other ones before, but that was, I think, the third one in school history, but the first time that we'd ever done that.
Yeah, that was special, man. And like I said, you know, you couldn't get another person in that stadium if you tried. It was just, you know, shoulder to shoulder as far as, you know, you could see out in the jungle and the stands, the like. So, you know, it was just a cool experience to be a part of. I mean, you're a young kid, right? You know, you live for that stuff. It's you know, you're living and dying on every pitch, and you know, the fans are with you. So it was kind of a little, you know, stepping stone to just awesome baseball.
Chris, take us back to high school. I know you grew up in Florida, and you had the opportunity to be drafted twice, you know, before you ever came to East Carolina. So just talk about your recruitment out of Seminole Community College.
Yeah, I went to Seminole. You know, I was never a big prospect out of high school or nothing like that. Never really threw hard. Had an opportunity to continue playing ball, which I just loved to do. So, and, you know, anybody was going to give me a scholarship, I was going there. I went to Seminole, the same thing, man, a lot of good teams. You know, I play with a lot of really good players. D. Gordon was there, Brett Oberholzer, you know, some guys that have, you know, some big league experience. And, you know, just the coaching staff was awesome. So that was a good learning experience for me. But, you know, I got drafted a couple times out of there. I never really thought I was, you know, ready, because, I mean, professional baseball is a grind. You know, as cool as it is, it's a grind, you know. It's a job at that point. And, you know, I always wanted to experience Division I baseball. That was always a big thing to me. So, you know, having the opportunity, and like I said, Jared Afchin, who is my best friend, known each other since we were in elementary school, played high school ball together, to get to go there together and play. I mean, it was a no brainer for me to, you know, continue on to ECU. And, you know, luckily I did, like you said, I got to be part of some really cool stuff. So it was a year I'll never forget.
And Chris, it doesn't hurt with the co-eds, right? The college life. I know that at East Carolina, it's stacked in your favor as far as the odds go.
No doubt. Yeah, it's definitely a big draw. You know, when you're a young kid on the campus and you're walking around everywhere you look, there's just crazy stuff going on. So it was just a good situation to get into. And like I said, you know, getting to come with my best friend and walk into a team that, you know, they said that they were going to be good, and sure enough, you know, we were pretty freaking good. So it was just a real cool experience.
And that's the thing, Chris. You know, that was going into year four of Billy Godwin, and those first 3 years. His first year, we had missed a tournament, but then in 2007, and we had made a regional, went to Chapel Hill, played pretty well, but lost the lead against the Tar Heels. Next year, we'd gone down to Coastal and made it to the championship of that regional before Coastal advanced. And so we were really swinging the bats well. We had had some good arms for sure, but we were really looking forward to, you know, deepening our pitching staff. And was that one of Coach Godwin's selling points?
Yeah, definitely. You know, and, you know, we saw what they did before. You know, we were baseball fans too, and we knew that they were always – you know, that team, not everybody in the world knew about them, but they were going to be a good baseball team, put together a good team every year. And, you know, that was also the cool thing. Like, you know, we kind of considered, you know, baseball at East Carolina as like their sport, you know. I know football was really good at the time, you know, they had fired off a couple, you know, conference championships, you know, when I believe Skip was there. And, you know, that was booming at the time too. But, you know, when we walked in, you just felt like, you know, it was a baseball school, and that's what we wanted to be a part of.
No doubt about it, especially when you look at the let's talk quickly. We'll get to your career, but the fans, you were talking about that. You just gave me goosebumps thinking about the fans are the best. I don't care what anybody says, and everybody may think I'm a homer, but going to school there. And
I think you're a homer.
Well, anyway, that's a whole nother show, Kyle. But the very fact that Harrington Field was rocking with the jungle. And then of course, Clark LeClaire, can you talk about the fans? I know that it's been difficult not having the season or handful of games. And then the season's canceled. It looks like we're still only have 7% of the fans because of COVID. Talk about
Dave,
your experience.
I think that applies. Dave, I think that only applies to venues 10,000 or more outside. So okay. I don't even know if we've got any kind of tally of how many people we can have for baseball.
Yeah, that's a great point, Kyle, because even if it did apply to Clark LeClaire, which is approximately 5,000 to 5,500, it would be 350 people. So it may not even be that good.
Yeah, and the fans are, you know, that's everything, right? You know, they bring the energy. You know, I would just consider, you know, like how they played this year. I mean, you know, it's almost like a scrim team every day, right? You don't have the fans in there cheering you on and that kind of stuff. So that made a big difference. And you know, East Carolina fans were different, right? They were passionate. There was people that have, you know, been season ticket holders for 30, 40 years. You know, it's just, you know, it's lifelong fans. And that's cool, man. That's what you want to be a part of. I still have, you know, Pirate fans reach out to me on, you know, social media and stuff, go Pirates. And, you know, it's just cool to be a part of that family. You know, even though I was only there for a year, I feel like, you know, I get to be a part of that family for the rest of my life.
No question. What about, let's talk about when you came there, we were talking about being a pitcher. Was there anything different? How was the pitching in Clark LeClaire?
It was nice, you know, it was a good field. I mean, it was back in the time when they had those juiced bats, I like to call them, you know, before they made all the crazy changes. Oh, yeah, to them. So, you know, it was pretty routine to see a ball foul there on Charles or something. So, you know, that wasn't much fun seeing those things come out like shotguns back at your face. But, you know, other than that, man, it was baseball. You know, it was competitive baseball. We always had fans in the stands. You know, it was always good competition. So, you know, I love pitching there, man. I learned a lot, too. I learned how to be a pitcher and, you know, how to set up lineups. And that's a, you know, a credit to the coaching staff we had and, you know, teaching us the fundamentals of stuff and, you know, giving us a platform to succeed at the next level.
Yeah, Chris, you talk about the bats and that, like you mentioned, that was, I think, maybe 2-3 years before they went to the BB Corps bats. You know, I want to say it was 2011. But talk about those interest squads in the fall of 2008 going against the likes of Devin Harris, Kyle Roller, Steven Batts, Brandon Henderson, et cetera.
I mean, they all had thump. I mean, you got a guy like Roller. He's just a scary dude, you know. He's up there. You know, the bat looks like it's a toothpick, and you know, he's hitting balls on the football field. So it was definitely a, you know, there was definitely a step up. Come from junior college, you know. Junior college at the time had good ball players too, don't get me wrong. They had draft and fellows going on. So there was a lot of good competition there. But just, you know, everybody in the lineup is good. You know, they're all the best players in their area coming through. And, you know, you got a little taste of Division One baseball and you saw those dudes could do some serious damage to a baseball.
Chris, you only played here 1 year, if I remember right. Conference USA in those days. What do you remember about playing Rice? Rice was always really good in those days.
Always good. You know, that was like the, you know, the team to go get, right? And I guess in our conference, there were some other good ones. But Rice, they always put together. I mean, they had Rendon at the time. Who turned out to be a Rendon, whatever his name is. Turned out to be a pretty good one, let's put it that way. I remember they had a really good pitcher. But, yeah, they were always good. Brock Holt was there as well, who has a pretty darn good career himself. So, you know, they were guys. And I think we played with them well, you know, so that was always good to play with those teams. But, you know, that was definitely the team to beat, I guess you would say, in our conference at the time.
Yeah. When you were pitching in the league or regionals or whatever, who were some of the toughest batters you had to face that you remember?
Oh, that's a good question. I remember some of the South Carolina guys being pretty good, like the Whit Merrifields.
Yeah.
And, you know, that guy. I remember the Rendon being, you know, definitely a tough out. You knew he was going to turn into – he was a freshman, I believe, at the time, but you knew he was going to be a ball player down the road. There was a couple guys that definitely stood out, and, you know, you would definitely bear down a little bit more before you would, fire a pitch in there.
Jackie Bradley Jr.?
That's another one. Yeah, he's turned out all right for himself, I'd say. There were some really good ball players that we came across that year. The Ackleys and stuff. So there was a lot of good ball players.
One of our viewers, Johnny Gardner, was chiming in about what we were discussing a few minutes ago, saying at this point the word seems to be that it will only be players' families when the season starts on February 19th against Rhode Island unless something changes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it definitely makes it tougher. But at the same time, I mean, I guess you get what they're doing and being safe and trying to, you know, avoid, you know, these guys getting sick and stuff. So. You know, try to go out there and just know it's a ball game, man. It's you against them at the end of the day, and, you know, just try to get and milk every ounce of energy. But, you know, college is different, man. You don't need to give these guys any extra energy. You see them out there jumping up and down and cups on their heads and all this craziness. Maybe they need a little less energy. It won't hurt them a little bit.
It'll prepare us for some of the boring road trips and the American to baseball hotbeds like Cincinnati and Memphis.
Yeah, I actually those are the ones I enjoyed, man. Memphis, you know, barbecue places, you know, going to those small, you know, places that have been around forever and it's just, you know, finger licking good. I enjoyed those places, you know. Obviously, it doesn't have the hype of a New York or something, but I'm not a big city guy anyway, so. You know, if I could go get some good food somewhere and I had a good ballpark and a nice place to lay my head, I was usually pretty happy.
Oh, yeah, not a knock on the city of Memphis. Certainly more to do there than Greenville. I'm just talking about the lack of interest in college baseball at places like University of Cincinnati and Memphis. Their fan bases don't turn out, so it may prepare the guys playing an empty stadium for those road games.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, it was different. And, you know, and like I said, going back, that's one of the reasons why, you know, we wanted to go to a school like East Carolina. You wanted to go somewhere where, you know, they were a thing and, you know, people cared and cheered and, you know, that just makes it that much better when you're winning. Some of those schools, I mean, you know, even the schools in Florida, the really good ones, you know, University of Florida is not going to have a turnout like East Carolina and Clark LeClaire Stadium every night. And, you know, it's just a different atmosphere and, you know, a different, you know, it's just different. So even those big schools don't get the turnouts that you get, you know, at East Carolina.
Well, that's kind of weird because, you mean, Florida, obviously, great fan base. They have great baseball. It's not like Gainesville is Miami. It's not like there's all these things to do. So you kind of surprised that Florida doesn't draw better in baseball.
Yeah, it's interesting, man. I think it's just, like I said, it's just a different culture. You know, here there's other stuff going on, but, you know, baseball is, you know, what people want to do. You know, it's tough to say it, but, you know, it's almost like a religion in some places, you know, like, you know, you're at Clark LeClaire on Friday night, Saturday, and then, you know, it's where you're going to be. So it was definitely a deciding factor in the very beginning of why we wanted to be a part of that program.
Now, Chris, your very first start as a Pirate came against Monmouth, and you went 7 innings, allowed just a single run on 2 hits, struck out 9, and didn't walk a batter. Do you recall that start, your first in the purple and gold?
Yeah, I do. Like I said, me and Jared were actually together talking about that one was one of them because we both had, a great game. And, you know, I think that some of the headlines were, you know, best friends or 2 Florida boys get to do it. So just to, you know, be able to do that with my buddy at the highest, you know, at that stage, you know, a high stage of baseball was really cool. And I do remember, you know, you that first one with the new team, you want to go out there and kind of, you know, show them what you got, I guess, in a sense. And, you know, you want to have a good one. So luckily I was able to, you know, do a couple of good things and, you know, maybe a little bit solidify myself as, you know, I'm here to win some ball games.
another couple I wanted to point out, one that I know meant a lot to you, being a Florida kid playing against UCF about a month later there in the middle or end of March. UCF came to Greenville, and you went seven innings, one run on seven hits.
Yeah, and it was just – I mean, we beat them up that whole weekend. You know, look, there were some fun scores. Actually, you know, last time I saw Cliff, I joked with him about that because he was at UCF at that time. He was the third base coach, so – you know, I joked with them about, you know, us kind of putting a thumping on them when they came up into Greenville. So, yeah, but, you know, that is cool. You know, you're back home school. I live 45 minutes from the campus. So, you know, to kind of beat up on a school that really, you know, they didn't show me an interest. I was right up the road from them. So to kind of go somewhere else and, you know, be a better baseball team and beat up on them, it was a cool experience.
You mentioned Cliff. Obviously, you played for Billy. Cliff, obviously former player before he became a coach here. How is he with the former players who, you know, didn't play for him? Does he communicate with you guys regularly, or?
You know, there's been some communication for sure. It's not, you know, not all the time. I'm definitely more in touch with, you know, Billy and stuff, just because, you know, I played with him and had more of a personal relationship with him. But he's all, you know, anytime I've ever been around Greenville, it's been, you know, nothing but open arms. I worked out there. One off season, I was living in town, worked out. He, you know, the whole facility was at my disposal, which was awesome. And, you know, when Coach Dan Rozelle was there, I did keep in touch with him, you know, just a little bit more. I never played for him either, but he was a pitching guy, so we had a lot in common. We would talk about pitching stuff and all that. But, you know, there is communication between me and Cliff, but, you know, not like some of the other guys that are more, you know, involved, you know, like the Sean Armstrongs and those guys.
What about the, as far as the, you're talking to players, I know one of the things that Coach Godwin has talked about is hopefully we can have a big fundraising campaign and raise the money for Coach Godwin, Cliff Godwin, that is, to have one of the things he talked about. And I wanted to bring, since you brought up Cliff and that you worked out there, one of the things the coach wants is to have like locker rooms for former players and talk about, we have great facilities. It's not like our facilities are lacking, but would that help you out? For example, the program, he wants to have his own weight room for the baseball players and different amenities like that. How big would that be as a guy that played baseball there? And maybe as far as the recruits, don't you think that would help us out a lot?
Yeah, I think it's really cool. You know, just showing that, you know, they're there, you know, after you're gone, you know, and a lot of those big programs do that. The, you know, the South Carolinas and, well, you know, I know there's a couple teams that do that, the Alabama and stuff, they have these locker rooms, Auburn, that, you know, are former players' locker rooms, you know, and it's really cool. It's a thing to come back to and enjoy. And you kind of always feel, you know, it just kind of solidifies, you know, you're always part of that program, right? If you always have a locker in the locker room, then, you know, it's just as much yours as anybody's.
No. Want to talk about your want to talk about your pro career. I'm not a stats guy, and I don't have the stuff in front of me here. Dave, do you have it? I don't know if Bubba's back with us.
I'm here.
Bubba, take it over. Pro career.
Yeah, shifting to talk about your pro career, like I mentioned in the open or had on the graphic, you were drafted in the 12th round by the San Francisco Giants, and you just steadily worked your way up through their organization, you know, and started off in rookie ball the rest of that 09 season. Augusta, which was A ball in 10, San Jose, high A ball in 11, Richmond, double A in 12, and Fresno, triple A in 13. So pretty much you were going a level up the ranks every season. And then in 2014, you made your professional debut at 26 years old against the Dodgers late in that season. So just talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you know, I made a stop at every level along the way. And, you know, I joke about it all the time. I played pretty much every level of baseball you can play, from junior college to Division One through, you know, every minor league stop and anything. But you know, yeah, I wouldn't trade it any other way, right? There was always something I learned. You know, once you get to that level, you get the best coaching in the world. You know, you're talking about how to keep up with your body, eating, you know, diet, just everything, weightlifting. Like, it just, it's, there's so much overload of information that you get when you get to the professional level, that, you know, the guy, hat tip to the guys that can, you know, get up to the big leagues in a year or two and perform, man, because, you know, it's definitely a, you know, get your feet wet and do it. So luckily I had great coaches. I learned something at every level, you know, I learned more at every level. So it set me up to, you know, have a little bit of success when I did get to the big leagues.
Chris, talk about your first time playing in a big league ball game. What was that like for you?
Yeah, it was against the Dodgers, man. And, you know, it's something you dream of, right, since you're a kid. So I just remember being really nervous, you know, going out to the bullpen and almost feeling like I didn't know how the ball felt weird in my hand, right? And, you know, I just kind of looked at myself and I said, all right, I'm going to just throw every pitch as hard as I can and, you know, just kind of hope for the best. But luckily, you know, I made my debut. We were getting thumped by the Dodgers, like 17-0. I pitched in the top of the ninth, you know, no pressure situation, just go out there and you know, do it. So it was a lot of cool things and, you know, it's a dream come true. Like you said, just try to breathe out there and reach back and throw it and, you know, get out of it, man, and enjoy it after.
One of my favorite pitchers of all time, certainly. His performance in 2014 speaks for itself in the college listening. The World Series is Madison Bumgarner. Talk about him and just, man, that performance he gave in 2014 was amazing.
Yeah, Bum's a different kind of dude. I mean, he's an animal. He really is. He just, you know, he's a cowboy. He ropes, he rides horses. He's more just worried about his, you know, cattle as he is, you know, getting the next guy out of the plate. And he's just, you know, country strong, but I say it all the time, man, you know, if I have to pick one pitcher in the game, my life depends on it. I got to win that ball game. It's Madison Bumgarner 100% of the time because, you know, he just has that ability to flip a switch that people talk about and, you know, take it to another level when it needs to be done. And you know, and he has just that dominant factor, right? You know, guys are scared of that dude. So, great teammate, awesome dude to learn from. It was funny, you know, looking at a guy like that, been around so long, but I was actually older than him the whole time. So, you know, I would joke with him and tell him he had to, you know, respect his elder when he was talking to me and stuff. So, I, you know, give him a little hard time. But, yeah, he's a friend, friend foremost, and, you know, a great teammate. And, like I said, one of the fiercest competitors I've ever been around.
Yeah, and he's a North Carolina kid. You're talking about him being country strong from up in the mountains, Caldwell County.
Oh, yeah. I think he's from a little town called Bumtown, they call it. You know, there's Bumgarners just have deep roots. So, I mean, and, you know, that's what he does. He goes home in the off season and he goes to his place in the hills and, you know, that's Bum. And, you know, it's awesome that he's able to do that. And, you know, like a North Carolina boy, he's got some roots. So, yeah, he's awesome.
I remember him celebrating the World Series, shotgun in that beer. That was one of my favorite World Series moments and of all time. I love that. And I was like proud that he was from the old North State. We don't like to say the Tar Heel State. We would prefer the old North State for obvious reasons.
There you go. Yeah, I like the second. But, yeah, that's just Bum. I mean, he probably does that on a normal Friday. So that's just how he drinks.
Caldwell County native. I wonder if him and Eric Church are buddies.
I would imagine the Bum's a lot of buddies with a lot of people, like that, especially being so close and, you know, living by each other. So yeah, I would imagine they're definitely friends.
Both of them are outlaws, no doubt about it. So I'm sure they definitely know each other, being from a rural area like that. But getting back to you, let's. What are you up to now? Tell everybody what you're doing now. I know you're in the great state of Florida. Well, these days, my kids, they want to. I said, where do you want to go after COVID? Where do you want to take a trip? Because we always take a trip. And of course, they hit me up with Disney World. So,
yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong with Disney World. There's plenty to do there. I'll put it that way. You'll spend plenty of hours in those parks. But you know, now I got into real estate. After baseball, I've been doing that about a year. You know, I just, you know, use my network around town and, you know, try to sell some real estate. So it's been good. I got a cool thing that I want to do with athletes. You know, I think having a network of athletes, helping athletes around the country, in real estate, it would be nice. So I'm actually in the mix of, you know, getting guys to come be part of, you know, this athlete thing and sell real estate with me. So it's been really cool. It's been a fun adventure. It's definitely different than, you know, strapping up the cleats and playing ball every day. But, you know, it's a grind. It's a competitive grind. It you know, keeps the competitive juices flowing. And it's fun, man. It's a good way to make a living.
Chris, we got to backtrack. Take us back to June 9th, 2015, Citi Field in New York against the Mets. Obviously, probably undoubtedly your most memorable day in the big leagues besides making your first appearance, like I mentioned back in 2014. You no-hit the Mets, struck out 11. You also had two hits and drove in two runs. And I saw an interesting stat about the fact that you had the no-hitter, but then 10-plus Ks and two RBIs. You were one of only four to have done that at that point, and I'm not sure if it's been done since. I doubt it. But Hall of Famers Jim Bunning, Catfish Hunter, and Bob Gibson were the only others to have done it.
That's some pretty good company right there. I'll take that company in anything I do.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, that's crazy. That was just – to be honest, you know, just blacked out. I don't remember a thing. No, it was awesome, man. I got the opportunity to live that dream that you do in the backyard, right? Throwing a no-hitter against somebody. And, you know, I got to live it. I had some really cool people there with me. My Little League baseball, high school baseball coach, who was a diehard Mets fan, been my coach my whole life, was in the stands. First time he saw me pitch. So it was a little, you know, it was just one of those weird things, man. It all came together, you know, getting a couple of hits. I mean, no Syndergaard was throwing. I mean, I was basically closing my eyes and he just hit my bat. So, you know, it was just one of those things that all came together for one night, man. And it was, you know, crazy to be a part of. You know, it was cool to do it, you know, at that level with that team, because that team was just full of good dudes who were, you know, sincerely, you know, happy for me. So it was just a very, very cool experience. And like you said, something I'll never forget.
Yeah, how many no-hitters have been thrown in Major League Baseball history? Do you know?
At the time, I think it was, you know, 200-something, 210 or something like that. But, wow. You know, it seems like there's a few more fired off every year. So I'm sure the numbers are different. But, yeah, it's, you know, like I said, it's a dream come true. Something you think about, you never really, you know, think you'll have the opportunity to do it, but sure enough, I did and was able to get it done. It was really cool.
Yeah, Kyle, you think about it. Go ahead, Bubba.
I'm not sure if there has been one for the Giants since, but that was the ninth as of the middle of 2015.
The ninth, yeah. For the Giants. Wow. I mean, that's just – when you think about all the Major League Baseball games that are played, even just 210 no-hitters, I mean –
304. Let's check. 304.
304.
Even 304 with all the games that are played every year. I mean, that's something that, you know, goes in the history books. That, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's, you know, like I said, dream come true. I got my, you know, after the no-hitters, they took the hat and the ball, and it's in the Hall of Fame. You know, so just something like that. You know, when I'm, you know, 40 years from now, I can take my son to the Hall of Fame, and you know. I got something in there that I wore. So it's just, like I said, a dream come true. Really cool thing to have been a part of. And just, you know, lucky guy to get to do it.
Chris, is there any no-hitter? I got to ask just because now I'm being greedy. Was there like a no – do they do like a no-hitter baseball card? Do you have like a no-hitter card?
I do. Yeah, they just did it top – printed one out, but there is one out there that, you know, shows us celebrating and it's no hitter and stuff. So there is.
Okay.
There is
okay. Well, if I can get my hands on it, I might get some mail from me. So, you know,
yes, sir.
You know what to do.
Send it over. Whatever you need.
Appreciate it.
Chris, as far as the, you always hear like, and we know on the outside, but just curious, never ask a pitcher, how superstitious are you like during those middle innings, knowing that you've got a no-hitter going? Do you talk about it? Do you not talk about it?
No, I was never a very superstitious guy. I mean, that's one of those things, right? No-hitter. Definitely, I'm not, you know, walking around telling everybody in the dugout I'm throwing a no-hitter. But, you know, I've never been a superstitious guy. You know, one smart pitcher one time told me, he said, don't get too superstitious, because at some point you're, you know, that superstition is not going to be able to be taken care of, and you're going to be out there, you know, feeling naked. So, you know, I tried to keep it simple, man. I just, you know, tried to not think about anything. But in the dugout during that time, you know, guys weren't talking to me. I was pretty quiet. So, you know, I guess for that game, I probably got a little more superstitious than I'd ever been.
When you get to the ninth inning, did you feel the pressure like mounts as the inning goes on, like seventh, eighth, ninth inning? But when it gets towards the end, do you feel pressure, or does it feel like just a normal game?
You know, it was pretty much no pressure until I got to the ninth inning, because, you know, I just assumed that they were gonna, you know, give a hit, right? It's the big leagues; these guys are the best players in the world. So I just kind of assumed that at some point somebody was gonna get a knock. But when I got to about the eighth inning, I think I had like 3, 4, 5 coming up in the lineup.
Wow.
That I kind of told myself, you know, if I can find a way to get through this, then I might actually have a chance to do it. So the ninth inning was definitely holding my breath a little more than the rest.
Does it cross your mind during that? Probably not. But does it even come in your head? To be sure, a teammate's not going to mess with you and go, you know, like all the other games are going live to this now in the ninth, and Sports Center, you're going to be the top story. I mean, does that even cross your mind until after it's over?
No, not really. I mean, just like I said, just luckily got it done. And it's a dream come true, man. You're not really thinking about too much besides, you know, like I said, like my first time out there, just throw it as hard as you can. Try not to pass out from breathing and, you know, hope for the best.
Yeah.
Do you have any, as far as the season is concerned, do you have any team that you think that's going to win in Major League Baseball, the World Series, or do you have any idea? I know the Dodgers will be really good again this year, but who do you think is going to win the whole thing?
They're always going to be good. I think the Padres, man, they've put together a pretty good pitching staff. They got some pretty darn good young hitters. So I think they're going to be a tough team to beat, most definitely.
Bubba was hoping you were going to say the Atlanta Braves. That's his team, but
I would love for the Braves. I grew up a Braves fan. I was a huge Braves fan.
We lost Chris there. Oh man, I shouldn't have joked about Atlanta Braves. So with Bubba,
at least we got through most of the interview. There we go.
I think if I come back.
Yeah, we got back. You back now.
There we go. Sorry, yeah, I'm trying to plug my phone in. It's wanting to dial me, but I can't get a charger to work in my truck. But
so you grew up a Braves fan, also like Bubba, huh?
Grew up loving the Braves, man. I was the biggest Chipper Jones fan you'll ever see. Loved the guy to death. And, you know, I tried to do everything like him. Chipper was my guy, man. I love the Braves, and they were good, right? They were rattling off, you know, NL East division championships every year. So that was just a cool deal.
As a kid, I hated the Braves. I was a Cubs fan. But the reason I hated the Braves is because I've told this a million times on here. It used to irritate me to no end when I'd go to watch WCW Saturday night and damn Braves baseball on TBS would still be going on in the extra innings or something.
I knew you were going to.
Yeah, they definitely you know, Braves baseball was the thing. You know, if you were a Southern kid, you absolutely loved the Braves. And, you know, that's how I grew up. And watching them every day on, like you said, TBS, you always got the games. They were readily available. So it was just a great, you know, franchise to follow.
Yeah.
I'm just going to give you guys a heads up. I'm working on 4%. So if I cut out, I completely apologize.
Well, we'll wrap it up. We don't want you dying on us.
No doubt. We appreciate you so much. Thank you for being a great pirate. Thank you for coming on and being a part of 23 Jungle Tales. And definitely, hopefully, we can get you back up to Clark LeClaire whenever we can have fans. Love to have you back and love to meet you in person.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you guys having me on. This is it's a lot of fun to go back and reminisce on some of those times, because, like, you know, I got to play in the big leagues, but, you know, no joke, playing at East Carolina was some of the best times baseball wise in my life. You know, it's always fun to get sit down and talk about that. So anytime I'm willing to do that. I would love to get back up there, come watch a ball game, and, you know, kind of see a baseball. I don't know that I've ever watched a baseball game from Clark LeClaire since I've left. So I think it'd be kind of cool to come back and watch it from a different perspective and see it that way.
And now, Chris, you could get some pirate beverages as well to enjoy the
game. Yeah, that makes it a little more fun, right? I don't have to get out there in the jungle. I remember they used to have some fun out there back in the day.
No doubt.
Yeah. Well, hey, go to the left field jungle, Brian Dilday and Todd Vivarette, the megaphone guys.
Those are the guys to know. Good to know. Yeah, I'll be out there, man. But, yeah, I'd love to come watch a game with you guys, get back up there, meet in person. You know, be a lot of fun. I just really appreciate you guys having me on and letting me kind of, you know, reminisce on some really fun times.
No doubt. Take care. Good luck with the real estate. And I know you're going to rock it out. And being like the no-hitter, I'm sure you'll be one of the best in the whole state of Florida. So selling real estate. Good luck to you. And love to have you back on during the regular season.
Yes, sir. We'll do it. I appreciate y'all.
All right. Have a good one, man.
He should start his own real estate company. I don't know if he's working for someone else, but if he's going to start his own, he should call it No Hit Real Estate.
Oh man, that would be awesome. There you go. We'll have to text him that for sure. He was in the green room, so maybe you heard that. And by the way, fans, don't forget. Speaking of the jungle and Jungle Tales, 23 Jungle Tales brought to you by PGXGloves.com. Want to make sure to give a shout out again to Mark Monikazi. Kaz is great. He's been helping us out. And Kaz has been with us here for a couple years, sponsored 23 Jungle Tales. Is up there on the screen, Bubba. People can get about anything gloves, right?
Yeah, PGXGloves.com. Mark Monikazi, during his playing career, he wasn't very satisfied with some of the batting gloves he used. He didn't think they held up very well. So he was committed, once his playing career ended, to start his own company and develop a much improved batting glove. And he's done that with PGX Gloves. Cool logo that you see there with the lion, the baseball in its mouth. And they don't only have baseball stuff. They have customized and personalized baseball gloves as well as batting gloves. But then they also have football gloves for your skill guys. They may have them for linemen as well. I'm not sure. And then golf gloves and then a variety of swag.
Yeah, I mean, you golfers out there, go get yourself some golf gloves. Bubba, do we still have the promo code?
It is TheSportsOBJ. TheSportsOBJ.
And go get yourself a discount. Save yourself some money when you're ordering some stuff.
20% off is my understanding, right, Bubba? PGXGlove.com.
25.
Okay. Wow. 25%,
I mean, that's an awesome deal. And I mean, awesome. I know we got a lot of golfers out there. And Pirates supporting Pirates, man. If you use golf gloves when you play, go get yourself some let me make sure I get the sponsor name right. Primal is a lot easier to remember. But go get yourself some golf gloves. Save yourself 25%.
PGXGloves.com. Thanks, Mark, for all your help. Kaz, appreciate it very, very much. All right, guys, we're going to put a wrap here on this version, this 23 Jungle Tales. It'll be going on for the next few weeks as we, I think, is that number 5 of them? My memory serves me right?
Yeah, that's number 5. And the first one, we caught up with Calvin Brown, former Pirate first baseman, 1987 to 1990. Then, of course, Billy Best. After Billy Best, when we talked to Earl Boykin and then Trey Benton, and now, of course, Chris Heston. So we'll have Bob Patterson, a former lefty for the Pirates, and then he also pitched for the Pittsburgh Pirates in the big leagues, the Chicago Cubs, Texas Rangers, as well as another team or two. And so Bob Patterson will be joining us here in the next few days, and a variety of other players, and we'll catch up with Luke Cherry and Billy Richardson, who played shortstop back in the early 2000s.
When did Bob play for the Cubs, Bubba? Do you know?
It was in the early to mid-90s. I want to say it was 94 to 98, 94, 97, somewhere like that.
Okay. So Mark Gray, Sammy Sosa.
He probably has some stories about those guys.
Gary Wood.
I think maybe the beginning of his time with the Cubs was at the tail end of Ryan Sandberg's, who's, of course, anybody there in the local Greenville area. That is Brian Bailey's favorite player. He named his son Ryan. Sure. Rhino.
Well, so Sandberg's retired in 96, maybe?
So I don't recall exactly. It was somewhere in the mid-90s.
Yeah, something like that. Sounds it out. All right, we'll put this version of 23 Jungle Tales to bed. Thanks to Chris Heston. Thanks to Kyle Barber, Bubba Rosenbaum. I'm Dave Richmond, and you've been watching, listen to 23 Jungle Tales here on the Sports Objective. Go Pirates!
You've been listening to 23 Jungle Tales on the Sports Objective, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates. All of these interviews and our other content can be seen on our Facebook page and YouTube channel. Be sure to like, follow, and subscribe. The audio can be heard anywhere you listen to our show, including but not limited to Google Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and Apple Podcasts. Follow us on social media on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ, on Instagram at The Sports Objective. Like and follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. As always, we appreciate you listening to the show. Go Pirates!